At night, inside the Kansas City Star's green glass printing facility downtown, reams of paper are pressed through cylinders of ink. They shoot up into the air and come back down into a machine where they're cut and folded. Then, a row of newspapers chugs along the ceiling. They travel the distance of a city block before being deposited onto the trucks that will deliver them to convenience stores, coffee shops, and yes, even some houses throughout the metro. The printing press is relatively new, but if you wonder whether it's becoming a relic even as we speak, you're not alone, and it's against this backdrop that the Star's new publisher, 38-year-old Tony Berg, has stepped onto the scene. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Tony, welcome to KCUR's Central Standard.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me today. Very honored to be here.
How long have you been on the job?
About 2 months.
Are you liking it so far?
I love it. It's a dream job for me. I started out at the Lawrence Journal World, worked there for about 10 years with what I think is arguably one of the great media minds of our time with Dolph Simons. I don't know if he ever gets the credit that he really deserves, but taught me a lot about how to run an operation, how to be creative and innovative. I owe a lot of being here to him. There's a lot of times I think he probably could have given up on me, but really stuck with me. And Mr. Simons has a real special place. And while I was there, the Star was really the place that we looked at and said, you know, we had a lot of high regard. I remember the first guy that worked at the Journal World that went to the Star, we were so happy and proud for him. So a lot of people get to say it, but I've never done anything other than be in this industry. And so this really is my dream job. Star's the first paper I ever read, and I feel very honored to be at the post I am now.
But something's got to be stressing you out. I mean, you come into a job like this and there's a lot of pressure, not to mention expectations internally at the paper and also externally, I mean, throughout the city. Everyone in the city, whether they actually read the paper or not, they have an opinion about it.
Yeah. You know, I think to some degree we've been our own worst enemy in some cases. We haven't done a great marketing campaign to be out there. We've certainly got some challenges inside of the building right now. We're going through a transformation that's an important transformation. You know, the Star celebrates 136 years this year. And of those, for 130 of them, the train's pretty much moved in one direction, which is getting out a quality paper and making sure that we remain quality journalists in the community. You know, we're at a place now where our place in the community is as strong as it's ever been. And I've shared this with people that our audience is as big as it's ever been. It's bigger than it's ever been. When you look at the digital audience and the digital scape of what we have, we really truthfully have not had a bigger audience. And that's in large part thanks to people like Mike and Greg and our entire stead of journalists that I think do great quality work every day. But we have challenges like anybody else. And on challenges, I'm working quickly to try and get fixed. You know,
can you be specific about what some of those challenges are?
Sure. The one that's at the top of my priority list right now is our delivery. I'm not happy with where it's at. We've had some challenges.
Delivery of the print publication.
Yeah, delivery of the paper.
Because you were just talking about how the paper has a bigger presence than it's ever had. I don't have those numbers in front of me. You do, presumably. But you're talking largely about the presence of the digital presence.
No, I'm talking about our audience is bigger. Not the paper has been bigger. You know, we face the same circulation challenges that other people do. But today, you know, I challenge anybody that says newspapers are dying to come in and spend a day with me. And if somebody doesn't get that newspaper every morning, I get a phone call, and it's not a happy phone call. And that's an area that we're working quickly to rectify right now. We've got new people that are starting, people that I've worked with in the past, people that I have confidence in that can get this problem fixed for us. You know, we have the same challenge as everybody else does. You know, today we live in a world where people use multiple devices to consume content, and how we deliver our content is critical. And selfishly, I believe, and it's backed up by analytics, that our audience has never been bigger than it is today. And that is across multiple devices, whether it's mobile, tablet, desktop, or the printed newspaper. Our audience has never been bigger than it is today.
We'll talk more about that pretty shortly, but I mean, The focus on the print paper, I mean, when you go by the Star office, it's just right across the street that you do see this giant printing facility, which is like a monument to print news. And, you know, being a publisher of a daily paper of record for a city our size would definitely be almost anyone in the industry's dream job. if we were in the 20th century, but you have to admit it's not what people would consider fortuitous timing to be a print news publisher. Is that something you get asked about a lot?
It is, but I don't look at it as a print news publisher. I look at it as a media publisher, and the media that we deliver on a day-in, day-out basis is the leading media in this community. And I feel very confident in the work that we do, and I feel very confident in the audience that we have. And I, as I said, believe that that audience is bigger today than it ever has been.
Explain for our listeners, before we get too deep into this, what a publisher does in the newspaper world.
My job is to make sure that everybody at the operation has the things they need to be successful, whether that's our journalists, whether that's our advertising executives, whether that's our press operators. It's important that they have everything they need to be successful. And then the other piece of that is that I think, quite frankly, has been missing from the Star is this type of a conversation with you, is you've got to be an ambassador in the community for what the Star stands for. I certainly don't want to ever envision a time that there is not a printed newspaper in the Kansas City community. And that's something that I'm committed to making sure doesn't happen, and going to make the decisions that it takes to make sure the Star is able to continue to produce top-level journalism.
We've spoken on this show with editor Mike Fannin, and I think it would be helpful to delineate really clearly for people how a publisher's work differs from the work of an editor-in-chief. I mean, what are the sort of lines in the sand that divide editorial concerns from what you handle?
You know, Mike handles the entire content side of the operation. He leads that, and I think he leads it as well as any editor in the nation. I have a tremendous amount of respect and faith in what Mike does. And now with the appointment of Greg Farmer as the ME, I feel confident that we have got the strongest...
Managing editor.
Yes. I think we've got the strongest 1-2 punch in the United States, and that may sound selfish. And the line between Mike and I is Mike delivers and distributes the content. I don't question his decision-making. If he feels like he's got something he wants on my radar and just that may cause some challenges or some issues, he doesn't come to me for approval. Mike makes those decisions, and I trust him completely.
And so on the publishing side, what is it that's sort of within your purview?
I'm not real sure. What are you asking me?
Well, I guess for a lot of people, when people think about being at the helm of a newspaper, their experience of it is largely editorial. So things like from layout to what is included and what isn't. And I guess I want people to understand really clearly what it is a publisher really is in charge of.
It's to be supportive of every division in the company. You know, as the Star has evolved, especially in the last 5 years with the addition of a niche division like Casey Weddings, Casey Spaces, Inc. Magazine, we do Middle of the Map, Bridal Spectacular. My job is to make sure everybody that leads those, each division of the company, has what they need to be successful. It's not my job to dive in there and make sure that I'm challenging or questioning the content that goes out or the advertising strategies that are produced. It's to be supportive of those people that have to do that work day in, day out.
Supportive on a business and financial level?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's advice. I think it's financial. I think, you know, I won't run from the fact, and I don't know if this is where you're trying to get, but I'll kind of take it.
I'm not trying to get to a specific place. I just want to really understand what you mean when you say you support all the divisions.
The divisions know that there's a transformation inside of the building going on right now. Our operation continues to move more in a digital direction. And so as we make changes in resources, we add resources. And we add resources specifically that can help us in the areas that the Star continues to grow and that our audience continues to grow.
When you talk about a transformation inside the organization, what kind of print to digital is a kind of transformation, but what does that look like to the people who work inside the paper?
Yeah, I think it's the way that, I mean, from the newsroom side, it's the way they tell stories. I mean, I think you see more stories now that have video in them than ever before. You're writing that story for a mobile device, for a tablet device, for a desktop. You've got to write snippets of stories to get out there as teases that before, you know, with Twitter and Facebook now, you've got to be able to get an audience grabbed early on in the story. From a business side, I mean, advertising has never been more complex than it is today. Somebody's ability to target and to use data is as good today as it's ever been. And so what used to be a reach vehicle for them is more a targeted vehicle right now. Our job is to make sure that that transformation has the talent inside the building. And, You know, a couple examples are we've brought on a video specialist in the advertising department, Tommy Gish. We've got Todd Feebeck in the newsroom, who I think is one of the great video minds in the United States right now. And we added an SEM person. We've added a RTB person. We continue to add these
positions. What do those things stand for?
So SEM is search engine marketing. RTB is real-time bidding. These are positions that give us a level of talent inside of the building that otherwise we would have had to use a third-party vendor or go outside of the community to use.
From a technological standpoint?
Yeah, and what we're really trying to do is bring as many of those services inside of the building as we can. We've got some very talented people in Kansas City, and we've been very fortunate to get them to be a part of what we're trying to do.
One of those things you mentioned is real-time bidding. Can you explain what that is and why that matters to a newspaper? Because again, I think people's familiarity with the newspaper is with the content on the page.
Sure. When you look at real-time bidding, you know, the Google Ad Exchange has been set up that there is billions of ad impressions that are out there right now for advertisers to be able to go and get. That's done on a bid basis. And so KansasCity.com is the number one media site in the region right now by a long shot. And we have an opportunity to utilize analytics and real-time bidding to be able to serve audiences not only on KansasCity.com, but people in the greater Kansas City area too. And that's kind of where it comes back to that complexity of an ad buy, where it used to be somebody would want to reach an entire market. Now they want to be able to hit a specific zip code, a specific house. In some cases, they want to hit a left-handed tennis player that lives in a house that's worth $200,000. We have the ability through real-time bidding to go find that person and to serve an advertising message to them, which is certainly something that makes us attractive to advertisers.
So how is what a publisher does now different from maybe what a publisher did 15, 20 years ago? Because so much of what you've just described is when you talk about supporting divisions, it sounds like supporting through technological changes.
Yeah, I think that's definitely probably the biggest change in the last 15 years. I mean, people have been predicting newspapers' demise since the 20s when radio came, and then in the 60s when color TV really exploded in popularity. And then even the early 90s when online really started to get popular, people said that'd be the end of it. I think publishers today really do have to have a good handle on what's going on with their audience, the analytics of their audience, what types of stories are they responding to, what types of content, you know, do we need more of in the community? And that's something that we work diligently at.
But that does sound like a little more of the editor role. I mean, so I guess I'm coming back to this, like, what is the publisher's role in that, in questions like what kinds of content are readers responding to?
That question right there. I mean, that's what Mike and I will talk about on occasion is what are the analytics look like? What are we seeing a lot of traction with in terms of audience? But ultimately, it's his responsibility to continue to deliver that content. And I think he does as good a job of it as anybody.
The word publisher does have that association with print, with the tactile publication that comes off the printing press that we were listening to a little while ago. Is the job title kind of a misnomer at this point?
I mean, I think you could say that it's a misnomer, but truthfully, like I said, I don't see it as a printing company anymore. It's a media company. And when you're a publisher of a media company. I don't see it as I don't see the Star as just being a newspaper. The Star is multiple things right now.
What made you want to be publisher of the Kansas City Star?
It goes back to Mr. Simons. You know, there was a story told about him, and he was an extremely humble guy, and I always appreciated that about him. But
tell us who he was for people who don't know.
He's the publisher of the Lawrence Journal World right now. I remember he went to, and he would never tell this story, but the story was told about him. He went to a newspaper conference in the late 60s and had learned about cable TV, and he came back, talked to his father, who at that time was the publisher of the paper, and said, Dad, I think we need to look into this. And Mr. Simons Sr. said, bring in a consultant, let's see what they have to say. And so Mr. Simons brought in a consultant. The consultant, and Lawrence is a weird market because it's got TV channels from Topeka and Kansas City. And so the guy walked around or drove around the town with Mr. Simons, came back and said, don't do it. And he said, just don't do it. And so Mr. Simons went back to his dad and said, Dad said, what did he say? He said, don't do it. It'll, you know, it's going to really hurt us. And I'll never forget, the dad asked him and said to him, he said, "What do you think?" And he said, "I think we should do it." And the quote that followed that with him was one that I've always wanted as a publisher, and I've always wanted to have my teams look at and respond to, which is, "I would have rather failed than let somebody else come into my hometown and succeed." And I will tell you, that's the approach that I certainly am going to take with the Star. I feel like this is my hometown, and this is my hometown paper. This is the first paper I ever read, and I am going to be out there doing things just like this, and I'm going to be a good ambassador for what we do and have a fundamental belief that the Star is and will remain the strongest media company in this town.
When you say this is the first paper you ever read, I mean, you think of Kansas City as your hometown. Did you grew up in Kansas City?
I spent my first 7 years. I was born in Emporia. I was adopted when I was a young age and moved up to the Stanley, Olathe, Overland Park area. Lived there till I was seven. Moved to Chicago and pretty much was there through high school. Came back to go to KU where I met my bride, who was from Cheney, Kansas, which is a very small town just outside of Wichita. When we graduated, we had an opportunity to go to a couple different places, but we decided to stay in Lawrence and work for the Journal World, which ultimately was the best decision we could have made. It's worked out really well. And like I said, I had the opportunity to work with, I think, some of the most creative media minds. You know, Mr. Simons and Mr. Gage and that entire company were willing to try things. And they taught me that lesson that you can try and things might not always work out, but it's better you try it than let somebody else come in and do it.
How did they teach you that? I mean, can you think of an example where they responded to a challenge really creatively?
Yeah, I mean, they came, they had a division called Media for Media. They started a Lawrence Marketplace. They started Lawrence.com. You know, they certainly got into that digital space and digital services. You're talking in the early 2000s that they were really, I think, a far ahead of where a lot of other media companies were, and they devoted a lot of time and resources to it.
I want to get back to this idea that the Kansas City Star is the first paper you read and that figures prominently in your attitude toward the work you do. You lived in Kansas City until you were seven, and I mean, I remember the role that newspapers had in my life even before I was an active news consumer, just when with print media especially. It's
sure.
A presence in your home environment a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, you know, what does that time period in your life, like that really early exposure to that newspaper, can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, that was how we got news. I mean, that was how I remember every day you'd go out to the driveway and it was like Christmas. I mean, you'd have that newspaper sitting at the end of the driveway and you'd bring it
in an orange bag.
I don't remember the color of the bag, but
if it was raining.
You know, my son, I've got two sons, and one of them's eight right now, and he reads the paper, and he sits down, and he reads all the sports things. He's a huge Jayhawks fan, and so he reads all of the content that Jesse puts out there and is a big fan of Jesse Newell's. And, I mean, that to me is the legacy I certainly want to pass on to him, is that
reading. He picks up the print paper?
Yeah, we share the print paper around our family. I've got a picture of him. It's funny, reading the Wichita Eagle when we were out there. He enjoys that.
You're 38. It's not like you were born yesterday or anything like that, but 38 is young to be at the helm of a daily paper like this. And it's also a little young to have a strong affinity for newsprint. I'm the same age. I consider that old enough to have grown up with newspapers, but young enough to have entered into adulthood right alongside the internet. Can you tell me more about your personal relationship with news consumption now that, I mean, both of these platforms, the digital platform, platforms plural, and the print platform are probably quite native to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you just said. Consuming news is native to me. I've always been someone that's interested with what's going on in my community, what's going on in our town, what's going on nationwide. I think, like you said, we've grown up in that time where your access to content outside of your own hometown has just exploded, you know, and the ability to see, you know, and the primary is a good example. You know, we've got a pretty interesting primary going on right now, and seeing the perspective that before maybe was just in one vehicle, now you have in multiple vehicles.
How do you think that experience is going to shape your approach to guiding the Star through what most people do think of as uncertain times?
Yeah, it's pride, and it's a belief in what we stand for and what we do. And I think it's been tough to have that the last 10 years in our industry. You know, we're not different from a lot of other companies. We've had our challenges. We've had to make some expense cuts and some tough decisions. It's hard to kind of rally behind that message, but I'm hopeful that we'll bring a platform to the Star that says, you know, we are adding resources in places that we need to add resources. We're growing audience, and we continue to grow audience. And I have a belief that we have people inside of that building that are longing for that type of message and that want to hear that. I have complete faith that the Star is not going anywhere in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. It certainly will not be on my watch that the Star goes down. And I will hopefully be able to reach them with that message and get them to stand behind that and feel confident alongside with me.
You mentioned that KansasCity.com, that just right now with the role of the internet, that we have access to other cities' news. That would imply a converse relationship too, that in other places they have access to our news and to KansasCity.com. I mean, is part of your goal to make that the readership for that site more than local?
I mean, it's already more than local. I mean, as there are stories that go on in Kansas City, you know, you'll have things like the Drudge pick them up and they become national news and they become national stories. I mean, that's already happening right now. I certainly hope that we can get the content to continue to be as strong as it is and grow in a way that we continue to grow audience.
Tony Berg, publisher of the Kansas City Star, stay with me through the break, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
KCUR Central Standard will be right back. Feel free to call in with your questions for the Star's new publisher when we return. The number's 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Back in a sec. This is Central Standard on KCUR, and today we're meeting with Tony Berg, the new publisher of the Kansas City Star. He's a young guy, 38 years old, far from being an old-timer with a nostalgic attitude toward newsprint. I'm sure he's been using one space only at the end of his sentences for quite some time. But he's as optimistic about the future of the Star as anyone. Of course, it's his job to be optimistic about the future of the Star. But we'd like to know what you think. If you have a specific question or concern about the business model for daily news, call 816-235-2888, and you can ask Tony about it directly. You can also tweet us. We're at KCURCST, and people often like to have conversations about our content there, too. Hi again, Tony.
Hi.
So let's do get specific. People have been watching the size of the paper and its newsroom staff shrink pretty steadily over the last decade and a half. Generally speaking, we, the city, take that as a bad sign. How do you see it?
I take it as part of the transformation. You know, it's part of our job to evolve our content. With the relaunch of the paper in the last year, if you see the 2020, we call it internally a 2020 vision. You know, we've added a depth section to the paper that I think is giving us some of the better content that we've had. I think it's been received really well in the community. I certainly want to see the printed product be successful. I think the reduction in pages or the smaller pages is a function of our transformation. You know, we continue to move the operation to service the way readers want our content, the way readers are interacting with the content. And so the paper is going to have some of those challenges.
We understand that you're coming out of another round of buyouts of newsroom employees at the Star, and some prominent reporters like theater critic Robert Trussell have accepted. What's the end point of the buyouts and layouts for newsroom staff?
You know, like any other company, we continue to try and evolve the business, and we move the business in the direction to be able to add the resources that we need to add to grow our audience. And you know,
some of the technology type positions you mentioned before?
It's technology positions. It's content producers. You know, it is people that can bring us to a place where we continue to grow audience. I mean, that's the end game for any of this, is to remain an important part of the community and to keep our lead in terms of journalism and being the watchdogs for the Kansas City community that I certainly don't want to see go away. And that takes transformation, and that takes tough decisions. And none of those are easy, and none of them are things that I particularly like to do, but they're necessary.
What aspects of a newspaper are crucial in your mind and can't be disposed of in the name of streamlining or transforming without stripping it of its ultimate value and purpose? In other words, where can you cut resources and where do you have to leave them in place?
There's no part of the paper that I would say is open to be stripped or changed, to use your terminology there. I don't
But
see
clearly
that
there are roles that can be stripped.
I don't know if you look at it as roles that can be stripped. I look at it as you have an opportunity to take the business where it's going. And to do that, you've got to get the right roles in the operation to take the business where it's going. I certainly wouldn't look at it as a reduction of roles as much as I would as a transformation inside.
So people shouldn't look at the layoff or buyout of a person who's been filling a particular function in that way?
I don't think they should look at it like we're doing away with content. I certainly wouldn't communicate on, you know, any of those conversations that we have to have. We completely vet them as an entire team, and we sit down and we talk about it, and we talk through the pluses and the minuses and what impact it's going to have. You know, we still have TV grids in the paper, and that's a piece that people would say, well, why do you have that? There's a lot of people that want that TV grid, and there's a lot of people that don't have access to cable but do have access to the newspaper, and we want to make sure we continue to provide the service that we've provided for 136 years, and I certainly don't see that changing.
What would you say is the purpose of a daily newspaper today?
Be watchdogs for the community, no question. I don't know if there's anybody that develops content. I'm saying this in the back of my head, I'm saying I know that nobody develops content. And I know that nobody is a watchdog for the community as strongly as the Star is. We have the largest newsroom in the region. We arguably have some of the best reporters, I think, in the world, and some of the best journalists in the world. And I'm going to stand behind everything I need to make sure that they are able to come in and produce that content every day, every week, and to make sure that they stay.
If people were in the room with us, they would see just visually in your demeanor that you are really passionate about what you're saying right now. I do have to kind of come back to this question, though, about layoffs in the newsroom as they relate to what you just said.
Sure.
I mean, how is there an end point? Is there a place beyond which those people filling those functions cannot be fewer than they are?
I don't know if my message is not coming across the right way, but I'm not saying it as we're reducing staff. That's not part of our goal and what we're doing. Our goal is to transform the business. And in a lot of cases, we'll be adding positions back into the operation that grow it. So I think the answer to the question, or maybe a different way to answer it, is there are roles within a newspaper that are changing. And how they change doesn't necessarily mean you stop doing something. It just means that with the advent of technology, you're able to be more efficient with what you do.
Let's hear from some of our callers. We've got Mary and Lawrence on the line. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call today.
What can you share?
Hey, all right. So I have I worked at a newspaper that is nearby, and there were a lot of changes. Of course, we saw a lot of things happening. But one of the things I did during my off time when I was there is I would go down and look at the presses. And it occurred to me that we were delivering into people's hands a handcrafted item. I mean, yes, there's technology and all of that rolled together, but my gosh, when you think about what has to happen for that to show up at someone's driveway every day. I mean, it's not something that you make, you know, 3 months in advance and then ship it out. So that was kind of that's an aspect of a newspaper, I think, that cannot really be replicated in any other way. And I just thought, it's such a genuine product. And I just thought, somehow that needs to be retained. I mean, that might be part of why newspapers are continuing to survive and why people are keeping them going. I mean, yes, it delivers a lot of information and content and all of the rest, but I think the nostalgia of it is a genuine aspect of it, and it's a brilliant thing to have, and I hope that we can keep it going.
Thanks, so. Mary.
My comment.
Thank you. One thing that interests me about that comment is that at the end she mentioned the nostalgia of it, and that's true for people who grew up with print publications. Do you foresee a time when that nostalgia can't be counted on because it hasn't necessarily been something people grew up with?
No.
Can you elaborate?
I think that part of what we do, and thanks for the call, Mary, and I'm glad that you've worked for a newspaper operation, so you do know what it takes every day to make sure that that gets out to somebody's driveway is a small miracle. And it's a really neat process to go and see, which is one of the reasons we're opening the building back up for tours. We do think that's an important piece for people to be able to go and see, but I don't ever see a time when the paper is not here. I certainly don't want that to be a message that we're putting into the community. I've only ever worked in newspapers. I have a real passion for what newspapers stand for and what they do, and I am still a guy that reads the physical copy of the paper every day, and I know that I'm not the only one because, like I said, I get those phone calls from people, and I know that we have a lot of people in Kansas City that are passionate about what we do.
Let's hear from Greg in Kansas City. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about you?
Great. Great show today, Gina. Hey, Mr. Berg, I have a quick question. In terms of timelines, how do you actually get instant information to the paper with, you know, Twitter and Facebook and information being so instantly available? How does the paper keep up with that? And how do you actually get information to the, like, is there a stop the presses button? Like, if something important happens, how does that get to the paper quickly?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I get asked the social media question all the time because social media is now the new thing that people think may be the end of newspapers. But social media has actually brought an audience to us that otherwise we wouldn't get. And Twitter and Facebook, I think especially, we've got people like Rhonda Prast in the building that I think do a really, really good job of managing how we get our content out to people. But yes, it's certainly, I was sharing with this with somebody here earlier, I think it's as tough today to be a journalist as it is at any point. I mean, it is to some degree a race to make sure that your content's out there first. One of the things I'm very thankful for is that a newspaper remains the place that people go for that trusted information. And I think you kind of see people sorting through that in social media right now.
Let's talk to Frank in Lawrence. Hi, Frank.
Hi, congratulations, Ms. Burke, on your new position. I have two questions. The Kansas City Star published articles, news articles written by Ernest Hemingway back in the 30s and 40s. Would those articles be available either in your house or online? And the second question, the Lawrence Journal World began having its papers printed with the Kansas City Star's printing presses several years ago. And I've heard that the Wichita paper is also going to be doing the same thing. How can you deliver papers at such a distance? And how many other newspapers are your printing presses printing at the Kansas City Star? I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks a lot for the call. As far as the Hemingway letters, we're actually working on a process for that right now. We've got a guy inside of the building, Steve Paul, who is a Hemingway historian, that I am hopeful that we can have a conversation about and seeing what we can do and what we can put out there for people to be able to see. The second part is, yeah, we are a regional printer for several daily newspapers. The logistics of getting the papers on and off the press to places like Wichita and the other daily newspapers that we print is a team effort. Randy Waters, who runs the Press Pavilion, I think is one of the great logistical people in our industry, and he makes sure that communication between those properties, that they have the opportunity, if there is late-breaking news, that we're able to hold the presses and make sure that we get that in there. Certainly as the election gets closer, you're going to see that there'll be later and later off times for the paper. But it's good teamwork from our Press Pavilion crew and our press operators, who I think are probably the unsung heroes of what we do.
Are there any holes in the Kansas City media landscape that the Star will be looking to fill in coming years?
From a content standpoint or a product standpoint?
Either one.
You know, I think from a content standpoint, small business is an area I'm kind of passionate about. I think Kansas City's seen a real uptick in startups. I'd like to see that be an area that we can work on and we can shed some light on. I think there are a lot of people doing a lot of work inside of the Star to try and put together a game plan for something like that. You know, as far as technology goes, I'd like to say I know what it's going to be. I mean, everybody seems to think it's going to be virtual reality or wearable technology. I don't know. I just am excited to see what it is and certainly how we fit into that picture.
How do you stay on the front end? I mean, how do you put yourself in a position to not be reacting to changes, but to be part of them? I mean, looking at the change that will happen down the road, not the change that's already happened, which is largely what we've been talking about.
I think that starts with our corporate office. I think guys like Chris Hendricks, Pat Talamantes, Mark Zeman, these are guys that are in front of these things, and they're making us aware of things that are coming down the pipeline and making sure we're preparing for those things. And again, it goes back to the conversation that's the evolution we're going through right now, is to prepare for some of those things that may come up and make sure that we have the talent inside the building to be competitive in that space.
Looking just down the road at your career at the Star, how would you define success for yourself in the paper? What kinds of outcomes would make you say, yeah, I was a good publisher for the Kansas City Star?
I don't think that's mine to determine. I think it's the team you work with. I think the reason we're in this position now is we've had great teams, and I certainly wouldn't put my stamp and say what that looks like. I think your team ultimately defines if you're successful or not.
Tony Berg, it's been nice meeting you. Good luck in your new role.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Tony is the new publisher of the Kansas City Star. When we return, a check-in on the Kansas City bands performing at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. They call it the Midcoast Takeover. Plus, our Story of a Song series. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back.